Hey, everybody, and welcome to this episode of The Blind Ambition with Jack Kelly. It's your friend Rick from Blind, and today I'm going to introduce you all to Michelle Gonzalez. She's the Corporate Vice President and Global Head of M12, which is Microsoft's venture capital fund. Before joining Microsoft and M12, Michelle was a managing partner at Area 120, Google's internal incubator, where she led a transformation to align the organization's strategy and investment criteria to key thematic areas within and adjacent to Google's core businesses. Her tenure saw a record number of projects spin in to become key products or capabilities at Google. Before Google, Michelle was an entrepreneur in residence and investor at Comcast Ventures, where she focused on AR, VR, and AI, as well as investments for Comcast Catalyst Fund, a dedicated investment fund for underrepresented founders. She was also previously a partner at IBM Ventures and a senior product and business leader at Apple. Thanks for coming on the show, Michelle.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you, Jack. Pleasure Thanks. To be here.
So hopefully I did your great background enough justice, but if you would, can you indulge us? Can you walk us through your career?
Yeah, absolutely. You did miss one. I feel like I've had this I feel like I've had this really crazy non-linear career. In fact, once a recruiting executive said, "You're what we call jagged edges. We don't know what to do with you." Because I've had just, again, so many different, I haven't gone deep in a lot of areas, but I've gone a lot of, kind of breadth. So I started off as a lawyer. Well, actually, I started off as a consultant. So I was working at McKinsey. I'd gone to law school, but I decided I didn't want to be a lawyer. Except I had the fortune, I guess, to graduate in 2001, when, if you guys remember, a lot of things were exploding right during that time. Right. Promptly got put on leave from McKinsey and joined MGM Studios. I was living in LA at the time and became a lawyer. So I was a lawyer for their United Artists Group, which was doing independent films like Hotel Rwanda, Bowling for Columbine, some really cool stuff. And I got to learn about film finance and putting together these kind of mini projects that became, films and were their own almost like little independent companies, which was really cool. I did that for about 3.5 years and then MGM got bought. And so I went on a little bit of a sabbatical. I did some travel. Thank you, MGM, and your severance package. Mm-hmm. Went back and did a little bit of consulting, and then joined actually a startup. So when I was kind of had gotten interested when I was at MGM in, at the time, kind of all things digital and the digital transformation that was happening. And there was a startup in LA was, focusing on what at the time digital cinema. Now they're doing a bunch of other stuff. And so joined this, kind of tiny company. It was the first time I'd worked at like a small company. And so that was, you got to wear a bunch of hats. At the time I had to be the lawyer plus the BD person, plus a little bit of sales and, work. It was the first time I got to work with product and engineering teams. And I really liked it. I would say like, it's interesting because I've been at these intersections of innovation, like starting new things, being part of the creation of new things. And so that's kind of a thread though that I would say that is constant for me is I went over to Apple, we were starting movies. I was fortunate enough to also kind of start to do some product work there and was able to run product for books and pitch. Me and an intern actually pitched the what became News. It was a product that we wanted kind of to see built and pitch that and ultimately got to work on that and kind of bring that to life. So all these little like
wait, because I don't mean to News. That's what we see on the phone all the time, like with the news.
Yeah, news.
That's you. Stuff.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So back in the day, I don't know if they still do this, but. So Eddie Q, who's the EVP of the Internet Software and Services, I think that's what they call the group, which at the time it included like iTunes and the App Store and iCloud. And so each summer, if there was a number of interns, and as part of, I would say, like the presentation at the end of their internship was like, hey, what is a project you've worked on or something that you think, you know, should be built? And so an intern and myself, we pitched kind of and created like what a demo of kind of like would look like of what a news app could look like. And so we, you know, we won the intern competition, which was essentially you got to present to Eddie and his direct reports. And after that, he gave it a green light. It was like the most exciting thing that happened kind of in, you know, my career up to the time to actually go explore more and, you know, kind of build a tiger team and go explore, you know, the creation of what ultimately became the news app. So yeah, it was really cool. But yeah, kind of like do all these like little like new areas. I think Area 120 was super interesting after being in venture. Because we had about 30 different product teams and we're all trying to kind of come up with like different new products for Google. Things were meant to spin into Google. And then we did actually have one spin out, a company called Byteboard that focuses on skills-based recruiting. So instead of, you know, having a whiteboard and, you know, a phone interview as an engineer, you actually take a test that's then graded by engineers. And then those, the results of those tests are then kind of submitted back to the hiring manager. So it helps eliminate bias, but also is testing for like real life skills. Like, can you really code something versus something theoretical? So that's something that we had kind of built internally and then realized that there was better potential for it externally as well. So again, all these little areas where I've been able to wear many hats. I love sort of the diversity and of different, you know, problems to solve and, you know, new things kind of popping up. And so, so that's been kind of, I guess, a through line for my career. And most recently now at M12, Microsoft's venture fund. So it's been exciting to come back to venture. I had kind of taken about a few years in between. And now, especially at being at Microsoft during this time, particularly with, you know, the Gen AI wave and just really excited to be back in venture. We've got about 100 portfolio companies. So again, keeps me on my toes and we're doing a lot of investments. So yeah, thanks.
Michelle, for people watching this and trying to figure out to navigate their careers, did you actively pursue each different type of niche that you, your company that you went to, or did people reach out to you, or like, how did that play out?
Yeah, I think earlier in my career, I was a bit more passive, Jack, in terms of, you know, if there was an opportunity that sounded, you know, interesting, I was, you know, open to it. One of the things that I learned early on was the need to have different networks. So there's kind of what I would say internal networks. So folks that are in kind of the organization that you're in, and particularly cross-functional networks. I was, when I started off again as the lawyer, a lot of times we were working with, you know, the business development executives, you were working, you know, with the producers, et cetera. And so having sort of these networks was really important to kind of helping, you know, achieve kind of, you know, whatever the outcome you were looking for. But then also external networks. So those are folks kind of within kind of your industry or maybe in an adjacency. And so I would say initially it was more kind of people driven. I was looking to work with, you know, really people that either I knew or people that I thought I could learn from. And then later on, I was a bit more intentional about sort of these moves in terms of where I thought sort of my career could go. And then I was very intentional about kind of creating, again, those networks or otherwise wanting to make kind of these leaps and these jumps. So I think sometimes people talk about, you know, people say, oh, I was just lucky. And I felt kind of later in my career, I was in some cases making my own luck, mm-hmm. right? I was raising my hand for new opportunities. For example, at Apple, I was doing BD for the video product when the woman who had been leading product for books left the company. And so there was a vacuum. And my, you know, boss at the time said, hey, you seem like you're, you know, good at product. Do you mind kind of stepping in on a temporary basis and you know, looking after kind of product for books? And so, you know, that was a pretty big risk, but it was something I, you know, wanted to do because it was something I had been interested in terms of putting myself in that position, right? I had taken on some product responsibilities for the video product, and that gave sort of, you know, my boss at the time the confidence to give me the shot, right, at kind of making that product. So it was still temporary, but then became kind of permanent. The other thing that I think was important was when I wanted to get into venture, I started with a friend of mine who was in venture, a dinner series, a roundtable series, where we would talk about emerging themes. I think back in 2010, we were calling it big data, or we had conversations about whether or not the mobile web or the app store would win. And we invited folks from the startup community, from academia. He was teaching at Stanford at the time, from the venture community. And so it was a pathway for me to go meet some of those folks, learn more about what they were doing, network, and, you know, ultimately led to when I left Apple being able to join Comcast Ventures. So I think in some ways, there was serendipity in a lot of it, but I was also very kind of intentional about making sure I was in, you know, some of the getting to know some of the people that could be helpful in the future.
Yeah, I love that strategy because we talked a little bit about this before the show started. And, if I recall correctly, what you were saying, Michelle, is that you kind of reached out to different people because you didn't know anybody and basically invited them for dinner and a chat and talk. Coming the new kid in town. And that's brave. That's bold. That's brave. And plus, you know what it does? It dispels the myth about networking. Because so many times you hear, okay, you have to network. You have to network. And most people cringe when they hear that because they think of you're going to like some place and you have the thing on, you know, your tag on here. And you go, hi, I'm Jack Kelly. Nice to meet you. And it's so weird. But like you did something really cool. It's just you invited people you wanted to meet and wanted to know. And then it accelerated. And that's a great lesson for people to just be really thoughtful, say, hey, what can I do to build out my network so I have more, you know, opportunities, but do it in a way that is fun. And I enjoy doing it. Right. And that's kind of what Rick and I are doing, actually, if you really think about it, Rick, right? Like pretty much we're networking. We're doing it one at a time. You had a nice big dinner. We were doing it one by one. So maybe we have to invite like 30 people on the podcast. I don't know. But I think something, right? Something like that, Michelle, is great for career, you know, advice to do something, to get in front of people, to get a chance to make something happen.
Yeah. Thank you. It was something that came to me because similar that like I was going to a lot of big events, these big conferences, and to your point, maybe you would meet a few people. One of the things that I kind of overheard and was an insight was a lot of times the speakers actually didn't get to talk to each other. They were just on a panel together and they wanted to have more off the record, you know, kind of conversations. And so you'd be surprised what, you know, a cold email, a very nice, authentic, I would say cold email, right, can do. And really putting together, you know, an interesting group of folks with, you know, I would say an interesting topic and perhaps having a point of view. I've seen, you know, a few folks kind of on my team have kind of gotten together. There's a group called like Gen Z VC. And kind of, I think a lot of times some of these things can come organically, but you're right. I was trying to take a more creative approach to helping build my network in something that felt authentic to me. And I actually, sometimes people ask me like, well, what are your hobbies? And one of the hobbies I would say was throwing dinner parties. So I did it with some more intentionality. Even though I'm not a great cook, I do know how to buy a rotisserie chicken.
is that what you did? Just like, as a hobby, you just invite family, friends over and like, oh, I'll do the cooking and just make a whole little party of it?
Yeah, so sometimes I would do that. It was a little bit easier when my sister lived in San Francisco. She's an amazing cook. But when we did these roundtable series, we kind of quickly outgrew that. And so we were working actually with venture capitalists, so to host some of these events. And so they provided the space, and then we provided kind of the content and folks that came in, which was really great. But again, it was, for me, I was learning about the technology industry. I was coming to the Bay Area from Los Angeles, didn't, you know, have that much of a network, was working at Apple, which was fantastic. But Apple is, as you guys probably know, it's a pretty secretive place. And so couldn't talk a lot about, you know, the work that I was doing. And so, but I did want to, you know, understand, you know, what this startup community, what venture was. I'd never heard of that. I'm from, you know, a small town in South Texas. And so all of this was like really new to me. So I was, again, intellectually curious, and then authentically just wanted to build out a network. So, yeah.
You make it sound so casual, but that's Rick, right? That takes a lot of guts to do that, because I would be worried I'm going to send out and no one's going to come to the event, and I'll be mortified. So that's brave.
The first one, it was definitely that. And I was, at the time, I distinctly remember I was like ironing the tablecloths and bringing in, you know, all of the ice. And so my co-founder and I, you're right. It's like one of those things where you're like, is anybody going to come to? But we actually had this great turnout and some really great folks. Some of the folks that I met there are actually are really good friends, you know, to this day. So I also have some really fond memories. But yeah, I guess it was a little bit of putting myself out on the limb. But
can we get a sneak peek into what these guest lists were like? You know, like, did you start with, you know, like immediately friends of friends, or did you kind of reach for the stars and say, oh, you know, this person is doing something really cool, or I just read about this person, I'm going to give it a shot and try to the cold email, you know, like what was that kind of process like?
Yeah. So the first one, we mainly did kind of friends and kind of friends of friends. So I was just lucky that my co-founder, he was teaching at Stanford. So some of his friends were actually, you know, Stanford professors and had written books. And so we actually got some interesting folks to kind of give some talks. And from there, what was kind of interesting is we engaged some of those folks for the next one that we did. We said, hey, we want to kind of, forgot what the topic was for the second one, but we wanted to have this topic. And then we would ask the people that had been at the first kind of dinner if they had recommendations for folks. And that was like another way to kind of grow the network and also then tap into, you know, other folks' network in terms of, we had what we called like a hosting committee besides myself and my co-founder. And that hosting committee was comprised of folks, again, that perhaps had, you know, kind of differentiated networks. And so it got to, you know, an area where we ended up did invite, you know, some folks, I would say that were, you know, a reach for the stars type, you know, folks. And then there were definitely folks that attended the dinner series that became, I would say, those folks. It was kind of early in their startup, you know, kind of journey. I do remember, you know, Sam Altman when he had his, you know, early startup Loop. There was the founders of what was called Zimride and became Lyft. And so, we initially started with just those friends and family, and then started to, you know, also reach into kind of, you know, other folks' networks and bring in kind of folks that we thought, again, could lead some really, you know, kind of good conversations. And again, that helped me because I was learning about all these new areas that were developing that startup founders and, you know, academicians were focused on. Just because I was, again, intellectually curious. And it also, you know, helped me meet some folks that, you know, some have become really good, you know, personal friends, others I've run into in business. And And it gave me also, you know, more insight into what, you know, the venture community was, what the startup, you know, ecosystem was as well.
Did you have, okay, I don't want to be impolite, but when you met the people who, you know, later started Lyft and Sam Altman, who OpenAI and ChatGPT, did you have a sense like, wow, they're going to be the ones, you know, they have the it factor? Or did you just think, meh, they're nice people, whatever? Like, were you able to judge like who's the ones that could be the rocket ship or not? How does that work?
I wish.
that you can figure it out. Is that what it is? That's the secret sauce to find out.
Yeah, there's definitely, I was going to say, because it's funny, Robbie and I kind of always joked, he was my co-founder, that we, you know, we should have just been, had a fund at that time and we're investing in some of the folks at this kind of.
Oh my gosh. Okay, yeah, wait. Can you share who else? Because this would be a good question. So Lyft, you know, ChatGPT, yeah. OpenAI. So far, you're making a ton of money. Okay, who else was there that?
I think we have a website that maybe not even that updated. But it was really just interesting. I think it was such early days. Like it was the early days of mobile. So I think we started the series like 2009, 2010. And so it was early days of mobile. So there was just a lot of creativity and explosion happening in, you know, what was initially called the sharing economy also. So this is kind of those early days of Airbnb and Uber and Lyft and others. There was, you know, apps that were being created and, you know, again, it was still, you know, pretty early. So, you know, again, at the time, it was just hard to kind of understand what would be kind of, you know, call it, you know, winners and such. But I always really enjoyed sort of that. I felt like I was getting a preview into what was going to be happening next. Like we had a roundtable I forgot what year, but there was a lot of discussion around this thing called Bitcoin. And I was, and so these are kind of some of the things that just stuck with me, that one of the things I think sometimes we underestimate is how quickly change will happen from a year to year. But I think I've heard this phrase of the years are long, the decade is short. And so how much has changed as I think about sort of, you know, in the, you know, kind of a 10-year, you know, time horizon, and what sort of folks have been able, you know, to accomplish during that time. It's just incredible. And I think that's kind of the magic of being here in Silicon Valley that I didn't appreciate when I first moved here, coming from LA, coming from the entertainment and film industry, just how quickly and how dynamic this industry, you know, is. So yeah, it was a fun time, and still is, right? I think we're hopefully entering into another one of those cycles with Gen AI, and you know, they're going to be a whole new kind of I think and there already is, I guess. We've met with, I think my team's met with like 600, you know, Gen AI startups, but a whole new, you know, kind of generation, right, of startups and disruptors and, you know, entrepreneurs and such. And so that's kind of what keeps me like, getting out of bed, really, you know, getting excited and wanting to kind of continue to learn and see where kind of things are headed.
So Michelle, Rick, do you think it makes sense to duplicate what Michelle was doing, let's say, Rick, with the people on Blind, right? The software engineers, software developers, to say, hey, maybe we should kind of pivot to AI because that's the hot thing. And, you know, see if, you know, we could have, you know, set up dinners, meetings, you know, go out for drinks to create that network effect. Do you think that would work with that cohort or not so much?
I mean, I'm not sure about the context of kind of like hopping on the bandwagon, because yeah. I think people forget last year there was Web 3.0 and NFTs, and seemingly we've forgotten all about that in favor of AI. But I think what's really interesting is, you know, throughout my career, I've noticed that the busier someone is, you would think that they would be so hard to get hold of to like be able to like book coffee or have dinner or respond to your email. But I find that the busier people are actually the people that respond the quickest. They often are like very responsive and accommodating, no matter kind of their seniority or fame. And so I think, you know, piggybacking off kind of Michelle's lived experience, I think it's very easy to kind of get caught up in the like hype cycle and say like, oh gosh, well, like Jack Kelly writes for Forbes. He's the CEO of a like recruiting agency. He's going to be so busy, or he's going to have a gatekeeper executive assistant. Like my email's never going to be read. But, you know, like we actually started this podcast where I emailed Jack and we went back and forth and here we are today. Right. And I've noticed like in my past, like my first job, I worked at a lobbying firm and I emailed this guy named Mark Benioff, and he responded instantly within 2 minutes to my like cold email for this project. And I had no idea who he was, you know, like looking back, I was like, oh man, I should have been more excited or impressed. Right. Like the CEO of Salesforce would respond to me in 2 minutes about something completely inane. But it's like little moments like that I think surprises people. And I'm sure you had the same experience, Michelle.
Yeah, definitely. I was, again, sometimes I was pretty shocked how quickly folks would respond. And I think that you can take that experience, Rick. It could be external, could be internal too. I get quite a few emails now pings or Teams pings from folks in the Microsoft organization outside of, you know, the area that I work in, looking for mentorship, career advice. And I always respond to, wow. To those emails. And so I do think you do put yourself a little bit, on a limb. But to your point, Rick, I think most people don't even try, right? And so, my mom used to always tell me the answer is always no until you ask. She was a bit of an entrepreneur. She had her own dental practice, and so I kind of always took that that phrase with me in terms of, you know, what's the worst that could happen, right? You know, like Rick, you reached out to Jack. What the worst that could happen is he said no, right? And so, Right. Okay, you move on, or Benioff, or, you know, so, but the best thing that could happen, right, is that now you have this podcast. I think you guys told me this is 101 episode.
Yeah, 101.
Congratulations. Like, what an accomplishment. You got to have that meeting with Mark, you know, Benioff, and so I think maybe that's some practical advice, you know, to folks is, you know, the answer is always no till you ask. And sometimes you got to put, if you want, you know, to achieve, if you want to advance, if you want to do something different, creative, you know, oftentimes you're going to have to put yourself out there, and you'd be surprised, I think, how often, you know, folks are responsive, especially if, again, you're being your authentic self and, you know, it doesn't feel transactional in nature. So I think generally people want to help others. And I would say folks, as they like rise in their career, there's always been somebody, right, that's lifted them up, that's helped them, that's opened those doors, that made those introductions. And so I think for the most part, people want to give back. They, you know, recognize that, you know, when they're now in a position to be helpful, that they can, and, you know, you'd be surprised how often they will.
That's great advice, because most people, I think, are scared of what's going to happen. But I could tell firsthand from a recruiter, I fail way more often than I succeed, way more. But after a while, you're like, okay with that. And then you realize, oh, whatever. It's okay. On to the next one. But I think for a lot of people, they're afraid to get that no, so they don't do it. And then they get stuck. So it's like, yeah, you have to be brave to do that networking event and crush your fingers and hope everyone attends. And then it works. And then you scale up, you know, you kind of ask for Mark Benioff to do something and it grows. So yeah, so it works. And if you said no, you try something again, right? You just keep trying.
Yeah. And if someone says no, oftentimes it's, you know, they may have said, Rick, maybe, you know, if Mark had said no, maybe there was someone else on his team, right? Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, other, you know, avenues. So I do think, you know, that's something, and it sounds like all of us have experienced that, you know, no, nothing ventured, nothing gained, right? And so I do think that for folks that are looking to, you know, advance, to learn new things, That, you know, oftentimes kind of that first, you know, cold, you know, outreach, you know, if it's authentic, can be, you know, a good start.
Yeah, I want to tap into your experience back in your career. Were there any kind of moments where you felt like you plateaued before you kind of like things started getting unlocked and like things started making sense? Or was there any like internal like sponsor or advocate or mentor that kind of like dragged you along the way and like lifted you up? And how did you kind of like discover that person or that moment?
Yeah, when I felt when I was at Apple, I had some really wonderful opportunities, and you know, Apple at the time, also, and you know, continues to this day, but you know, really high growth company. We were just at kind of the dawn of the App Store, you know, adoption, you know, by consumers of, you know, all this digital, you know, technology. One of the things that I think it was super helpful for me was I had a manager who was very direct in his feedback. And it was the first time I had, you know, somebody who really sort of was able to help me see those blind spots that were holding me back. And recently I've been through the Brené Brown training of Clear is Kind, and really sort of appreciate that this manager was very clear, you know, and kind, but to point out areas where, you know, I was not being, I would say, kind of authentic in a relationship or being too transactional, right? Not taking a step back and seeing, you know, a lot of times I was focused on what I needed to do and not taking a step back and thinking about the bigger picture and putting myself in others, you know, shoes. Also, I was a first-time manager. This was a fantastic opportunity, but a huge learning curve, right, in terms of managing a team. And so viewing feedback as a gift, and taking it gracefully and really reflecting, you know, on it, I think was something I will ever be grateful for, having, you know, a manager that helped me kind of see where sort of there were, again, these, you know, opportunities, right, that were holding me back from being promoted to a more senior leadership position. And so, you know, I think that, you know, oftentimes it's easier for managers to just kind of be silent, or, you know, more, I would say, nuanced and not as direct, right? Because it these sometimes can be uncomfortable conversations. But I've always now taken the approach of, it takes courage, right, for somebody to give you feedback. It means that they care about you and that they want to support your career. And so while initially you might have a reaction, right, and it could be defensive, it could be like your blood, you know, you start getting kind of right, a physical reaction. And sometimes you might say something that, you know, you wish you didn't. And those kind of moments, I like to, you know, count to 10 and have a response, right? Or a phrase I've recently learned that I think is a good one is, I'm going to sit with that for a little bit and just, you know, leave that at that. And so it's, you're acknowledging, right, you know, the feedback, you're going to take the time to have a response, not a reaction, and then come back to that. And so I do think, like, I think oftentimes we love hearing about all our strengths and the things that we did great. And when you write on those performance reviews, all the things you accomplished. But I think seeking out, and again, I was fortunate to have a manager, but also seeking out real constructive feedback, because, and being open to it, that's a very, I would say, kind of hard skill. But if you've plateaued, there's a reason for that. And so, like, how to debug that and get those folks who will actually tell you, you know, the truth, or at least their point of view of what they're seeing that's kind of holding you back. And so I think seeking out, you know, folks, and then being receptive, right, to that feedback. That's the other piece, and viewing it as the gift that it is. And oftentimes, look, you don't have to take everything, but at least it gives you more to work with, right? In terms of what are those skills that you may be missing, or the relationships you haven't built, or how you're perceived. That may not be your intention, but if you are being, you know, experienced or perceived, you know, by other teammates or other groups, that's negative and harmful kind of to your career. How do you kind of address that as well? And you may not even have, again, that information to help you work through. So I would say, you know, the one, you know, kind of, again, I'll be forever grateful is that clear is kind, that feedback that really, you know, if someone had just said, hey, everything's going great, still not getting promoted, you know, but being, you know, very, you know, again, direct about sort of, you know, the areas that need to be focused on, that you need, you know, to work on. And then again, also providing you with then the opportunities to get those skills, right? So take those courses on executive presence or presentation skills or communication skills, work with you, right, on building the right relationships that you need, or repairing, you know, relationships that, you know, perhaps you didn't even know may have been broken, et cetera. So I think, again, finding kind of those folks, sometimes you're lucky enough to get that in your boss. Sometimes you've got to look outside of that and find that, you know, sponsor that is going to do that for you. I
really appreciate that reminder and kind of that kind of first principles thinking, right? Of being able to recognize when an opportunity presents itself, whether you're making that luck, whether the luck just naturally comes and presents themselves in a sponsor that's outside of your organization, that's outside of your management chain, or if you're lucky, where it's your actual direct supervisor or direct manager. So really, thank you for coming on the show, Michelle, and sharing these insights with us.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's it for The Blind Ambition. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.